My name's Chris Kirk, and this is TW Talks, the interviews podcast from 3 Weeks Edinburgh. I'm sitting in the Assembly Club bar. We're at the heart of the Edinburgh Fringe. It's happening all around us, and we're talking to some of our favourite Fringe performers who have shows at this year's festival. Today, Jenny Gorlick, whose show Sorry is on at Monkey Barrel. Let's get TW talking to Jenny. So I am still here at the Assembly Club bar. More guests joining me to talk about their Edinburgh Fringe 2026 shows. Jenny Gorlick is here. Thank you for joining us.
Hello. Thank you for having me.
Getting you out of bed on a Friday morning.
Yes.
At the end of the first week of the Fringe.
I did get out of bed earlier, though, because I'm in the dorms and I need that free breakfast.
Oh.
So I make it out. I will be up by 9:50 every day.
That's
to get the last 10 minutes. Yes.
In essence, you paid for that breakfast.
I have to get my beans.
So go and get... Is it good breakfast?
Yes, it's amazing. Oh, I'm truly getting into beans for breakfast.
Beans? Oh, yes.
I love beans now.
Oh, just the beans or with some bacon?
With a potato, with bacon, with eggs. I do yogurt, fruit. It's amazing. I love the dorms.
So you are at the very least starting the day with nutrition.
And then I crawl back into bed right. So you've prevented me from taking my right after I wake up nap. So I will be taking it after I do this.
So as soon as this is over.
Yeah, I'll crawl back in.
There's some sofas here in this room.
I just sleep in the corner while you do the rest of your interviews. Exactly. And you're like, don't mind her. It's like the gorilla show where the gorilla just sits on stage.
But
Jenny takes a nap.
Deprived her of her post-breakfast nap. Well, past, present, future is the format. So we are going to talk about this year's show. That's really why we're here. But let's first of all do your journey in comedy.
Yes.
So here's the tricky question. If you had to, is there a moment you could identify where either you did something or you saw something which sort of started you on this journey in comedy?
So I wanted to be a child actor very badly. And I was a pretty fabulous little actor. I got an agent very early at like 9 years old. And then I was starting to do like some very serious auditions. But I'm such a perfectionist, still am, that I would like kind of throw a fit if I didn't feel like my audition was perfect. And then my parents were like, we're actually not going to do this. Like, we can already see that this is toxic for you and we are not going to do this. So I've been very gregarious and outgoing and love to perform since childhood. But I've also been more responsible than maybe I needed to be. And I double majored in business and theater thinking I would be like a producer. And yep. I do produce. And that has been my day job for all of these years. However, in producing, I realized that the thing that I love the most is performing and writing.
So when you studied business and theater, the theater side of that was the performance
it was.
Theater side. Yeah.
Yes. But also because I went to Brown, and apologies for that, but the theater program at Brown is less like it. There is a performance aspect, but it's also just like theater study, literary.
Yeah. So studying the art form, the history.
Yeah, exactly. Very intellectual.
Yes.
Of course. So I was on the improv team in college, which was a big deal. Loved that. And then moved to New York right after graduating and was still working my day job in producing.
And that's producing theater?
Yes. Producing theater. And then it became events, like corporate events.
Yeah.
Follow the money. And there's so much lower key than theater people. Like, I worked on Avenue Q, the puppet show.
Yeah.
I was the company manager of Avenue Q, and the puppets were my boss. And, like, they were dramatic. It was a lot. I didn't really want to be taking orders from the puppets. So at the same time, I was still doing improv, and I was starting to do stand-up in New York. And then since then, I've now taken a more like corporate job that's very flexible. I'm currently working it right now while I'm here in Edinburgh, and then have been really pursuing stand up and also writing. I wrote a book, The Book of Red Flags. That was a commission. So like the publishing house wanted someone to write a illustrated book of red flags for them. And when they searched for someone to do it, they were like, who is the girl who's dated the most of the worst men? And that was my SEO. So then they asked me to write it. And that's essentially what my show is about.
So the pivot from improv to stand-up, was that then doing the open mic scene and growing the traditional route?
So what's interesting is I started all of this in New York. So it's a very scary place to like begin your comedy career because you're with the best of the best.
Yeah.
And also there is a lot of like industry and access and like people are seeing you as you're like working things out and you're like figuring out what your voice is as a comedian. So I was doing improv at first, which was very like fun and casual at UCB, which fell under for a second, then came back.
Yeah.
But I got into stand up because I had the opportunity to produce shows at Union Hall pretty early because I've always been a good producer. And when doing the shows, I had hosting bits, but I was like, I need to have real jokes. So actually, I was working out my real jokes on booked and produced shows way earlier than I probably should have been, to be honest. Like, I was not doing the open mic scene at first. And then I realized, like, oh, wait, I really need to be,
yeah,
like, boots on the ground working on this.
But I guess by the time you reached the open mics, you had already got basically, yeah, the basis of yes, the stand-up.
Yeah. And I already had, like, amazing performance opportunities.
Yeah.
Which was incredible. And like, you learn quickly it's like fake it till you make it.
Yeah.
So I was faking it and now we're trying to make it.
And then in terms of, I suppose you're doing the open mics, you're doing the sets at the events, mm-hmm, you're organizing, in terms of going on that journey and doing more club sets and growing the set length, mm-hmm, was that something that happened relatively quickly? Because I guess you had the advantage that A, you were quite well connected because, mm-hmm, you're your,
yes,
production staff. You are, although, yes, New York, it's two-sided corner, I know, because so much great talent and so, mm-hmm, much competition. But also, the industry's there.
Right.
It's on your doorstep. So did you feel you got to sort of progress quite quickly?
I feel like the pandemic really put a pause.
Of course.
So, of course. And we all feel that way.
Yeah.
So I felt like I was kind of on having some momentum.
So you've begun the journey, starting to grow,
yeah,
shut down.
And then I pivoted to do more online content, but not so much that it like was life changing. You know what I mean? I just like dipped my toes into doing more sketch videos or like online. Although I don't really want to be a content creator and I've never really done,
yeah,
that world. I'm not really doing front facing talking to the camera videos. Although I'm very impressed by people who can do that and not like look at it and hate it. But I feel like I have started to gain momentum again now recently, but there was a little dip during that period of time. And also, I've had some incredible opportunities this whole time, but there are others that like still evade me,
yeah,
you know, which is, yeah, how everyone feels.
Yeah.
So, debuting here feels like it's been a huge goal of mine forever. I've been coming for the past 5 years. It's my fifth year coming, but my first debut hour, and like this has been something that I've been wanting to do,
yeah,
that whole time. The first time I came, and I was here for just a couple days, like taking in a lot of shows, just trying to see if I would like it. Which I had a feeling I was going to love it because I'm a theater kid, and this is theater summer camp, best place in the world.
Yeah,
yeah. Theater summer camp, and like, the plague happened in the building. Fabulous. Amazing. So I knew kind of I was addicted immediately. And then the next year I did the whole month in the Free Fringe doing a play that I had written.
Oh, cool.
And I did a stand-up showcase show at The Stand. And I love them. So they were great. And then I brought that same stand-up showcase show for 2 weeks the next year. Then last year, A Whip.
Yep.
Monkey Barrel, and now this year, finally, the debut. And I was like waiting the whole time to just have like to feel like I was coming in with like a strong debut. So like that I feel confident in my jokes, I feel confident in the structure. I know that I have a venue that I'm excited about, and Monkey Barrel is my favorite.
Yeah.
And that I have a producer that cares about me and is good at what he does, and that's Big Head, and that's been fabulous. And like I have Gabby Gerard PR, she's the best. Like I wanted everything to be in place.
Yeah.
Which is how you know that like I'm having freaking temper tantrums as a little kid in my auditions when it's like not. I'm like, I did the line wrong. So mad. I'm a little chiller now. Just a little.
So I guess since the pandemic, Edinburgh has been a big part of growing and figuring out exactly what it is that,
yes,
you want to do.
Literally. And I'm so inspired here. I've seen the best shows that I've ever seen while here. It makes me want to be a better comedian. I like, and it's been so incredible this year, my first time doing my hour every day, to like be able to adjust the jokes and make changes and like make it better every day in a way that you just can't in New York. Like there's no market for me to do my hour every,
yeah,
day, right?
Yeah.
And like I do tour a little bit, but I'm not such a big comedian that I can like go to these incredible venues every weekend.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So, and it's in doing it so often, so close together, that you really can make some amazing like changes and discoveries. Because when you let it sit for a month and then you do it again, you're like,
yeah,
oh, right,
course,
I have to get the cobwebs off,
yeah,
every time. And now it's like, oh, it's in my bones. And I'm like, oh, this is a good idea for what I should do in this section. Or let me try phrasing this slightly differently. And like even that small stuff is like really, like, very fun for me to discover. It feels like math to be like, okay, if I just switch this line to here, is that going to get a bigger laugh? Let's check. And then it does. And then I'm like, okay, sticking with that. It's fun.
So we're into the present. Let's talk about the show. You alluded to the theme earlier, but maybe tell us what the show is about.
Okay. So it's called Sorry. And that comes from at the very beginning of the show. So this doesn't really feel like a spoiler. I go on a date with a guy. I go home with him. I find out he has Sorry Mom tattooed on his ass.
Oh.
In Helvetica. No punctuation. Okay. So,
good font choice.
Yeah, an interesting font choice.
Very basic.
Easy to read.
That's true.
Yeah, very readable.
Would be good if it was on a billboard.
Yes. Yeah, you would know exactly what it means. So went on that date with him, went home with him, and then we set up a second date. He stood me up on the second date. So he never showed up to the second date. Really sad. So I tell this story, and that is kind of where the basis of Sorry came for the title. But also thematically, it's about gender dynamics in a really big way, because that's the thing that I've been writing about the most, like, in my early career right now. Because at 34, one of the biggest things that you're trying to do is find a life partner. Like, dating is a full-time job for me right now. So, and it's hilarious and it's disastrous. And there's so much comedy to be found from it. Because if we're not laughing, then we're crying in a face mask watching Bridget Jones's Diary again. So I start with that story, but then I talk about my dating life in general, about sex, oops. And then I go into my family and then my extended family, my grandparents' relationships, kind of looking at, like, historically, how have relationships kind of changed from now to my grandpa? And then I look at the world at large in relationship dynamics. So that's kind of how it goes. And it's very funny. It's very girly. I think women find it very relatable. And I think men enjoy it because there are a lot of strong punchlines, and boys love that stuff. But also, I think they learn a lot from it. Or, like, I think you go and you become a better person. And, like, there are jokes about couples and about marriage and whatever. And I feel like couples that come, like, definitely have something to talk about later. Like, you know, the book that's about, like, how to talk to your significant other about, like, the distribution of labor in your home, like, the chore book, and then you can, like, go through and do the checklist, whatever. I have jokes that are within that theme, and I do think that section in particular is something, like, everyone's talking about that when I go home.
Yeah.
They're like, okay, we actually have to address that. And now that you brought that up.
You're prompting a talking point. The couples in the room.
Yes, I'm causing an argument.
Yeah.
Maybe after. But then I think they'll be stronger.
Yes. Yes, so ultimately, positive outcome.
Yes.
And with the show, to what extent were these sort of things you've been covering, jokes you've been telling in the club sets that you were able to just glue together into an hour, or did you basically start off a blank sheet of paper?
I started with jokes that I had already written and jokes that I have been doing. But it turns out when I was, like, putting them into a Word document and deciding on an order with my director, Ashley Rodbro, who's amazing, and she worked on Oh Hello on Broadway and John Mulaney's last special, so comedy girl, theater comedy girl. She and I, when looking at all my material, were like, well, thematically, it is so aligned on the same themes. Yep. There are jokes that did not make it in that are just irrelevant, but, like, the everything that I have been talking about has been just, like, my feelings about dating now and, like, what it feels like to be a woman today in, you know, this, like, very weird landscape for men, you know, as men are becoming, like, more like distant from each other there, as women and men are, like, not aligning politically, as, like, you know, but it's the show's about that, really. But you don't think it's gonna be about that at the beginning. At the beginning, it's very silly dating stories. So when we looked at it all together, we were like, okay, well, there is a through line here. And then structurally, I start with a different story about my most recent ex-boyfriend, and that we didn't discover that until 2 weeks before the fridge.
Oh, wow.
I know, which is so scary. I did the show at Union Hall, my favorite venue in New York, on the Tuesday, 2 weeks before the fringe. I ended that show and I was like, this is not, I don't feel good about this. Like, this is not, the beginning and the ending are not working. And then we, like, redid it together, me and Ashley. And I love what the beginning and the ending are now. But we really did have to find it. So it has a little bit more, like, just a touch of storytelling in it. But it's stand-up.
You mentioned the team you've got around you.
Yeah.
Great team working with you. But I guess because you also wear this other hat
mm-hmm.
as a producer, whether that's events or whether that's theatre, what is it like sort of handing that over to other people and then you're the person on stage.
Well,
the show.
They're amazing. So number one, they're doing everything. And I have never felt so taken care of in my life. I feel so lucky. Like, it's so nice to have someone else who's like, I will fix it or I will figure this out. And they do. And like, also the staff at Monkey Barrel is so fabulous. And I love Monkey Barrel so much. So like, that has been amazing. I feel like I can breathe in a way that I'm always just like, have to be on top of everything. I also do think I am a little bit annoying. I think I have more questions maybe than other acts, and I know what to ask. So I think because I'm informed, I am like, okay, what's happening with this?
Yeah.
In a way that like, maybe it would be nice if I just like knew it was happening and assumed it was happening. But like, I like to know.
Yeah.
Just tell me. And then they do. But I never know like press-wise who's coming.
Yeah.
I want to know that stuff. So like, it's so nice that like Charlie is handling that, Gabby's handling that. I don't have to look at it.
Yeah.
Because I would freak out. And, so.
And I guess it, from their side, they have got somebody who knows. Because I guess sometimes you'll have people who are performing, they're working with a producer, and they don't really know what the producer is doing.
Right.
And hopefully they'll have a great relationship. It's all working fine. But I think sometimes there'll be that moment in the fringe where it's like, is my producer doing it? Why am I paying this?
Right. What is this for?
Whereas you have full understanding. Oh. I know what you're doing. I know why you're here.
Yes. And I feel so like comforted by that. But yeah, so I hope they feel that I support that as much as they support me. And sorry to be just a little bit annoying.
Let's talk future. I have two future questions. Okay. So first of all, the future of this show. Yes. Is the plan to now take this back to the US or perform it elsewhere?
So we're going to manifest this here because I don't know yet. I don't know. But I'm going to say it out loud. Yeah, I'm going to say it out loud. So hopefully it does.
Yeah.
But we're inviting all the right people. So I hope they do actually come, including like producers, like bookers. I would love to do a UK tour. I want to do Soho Theater. I would love to take it back to the US. It would be amazing to have like a residency off Broadway. It would be incredible. And then I want to tape the special at that residency. And then ideally, someone wants to buy it and someone wants to pay for producing it and taping it and all of that. And then we release it somewhere fabulous. Like, I don't know, Netflix. It would be incredible. But like, I think regardless, even if not all of these things happen, I will film it and release it at the very least on YouTube.
Yeah.
So it'll be out there eventually. It's just a question of how much outside support will I have?
Yeah.
And what is the timeline going to be based on that?
Yeah.
So we'll see. I'm so hopeful. I've been getting good reviews. I'm having a lot of fun. I think it's a really like tight, good show. So I want to put it out there. I'm ready for people to see it. And what's really interesting about Americans is we are so precious with our jokes, different from the UK where people write a new hour every year and they're just like, Felisa, whatever, writing a new hour, right? We don't have the opportunity to do that. So we will just hold on to our jokes very tightly for years until an opportunity comes where we're like, finally, I'm going to tape it.
Yeah.
And then you just don't know if or when that opportunity will come. So I just feel like it doesn't benefit me to hold on to these because I hope to not be in this like stage of my dating life forever. I hope that like I'll meet someone eventually and I'll have other things to talk about. I'll do my boyfriend hour next.
Of course.
Right, of course.
Be like Adele with her albums.
Yeah, exactly.
Each one a different period of the life.
Exactly. Because, you know, I'm growing up in my jokes were too.
Yeah.
So, and some of these I've been doing for 6-7 years.
Yeah.
Like, and they're fabulous, but it's time.
Yeah.
So.
And then my second future question is, so you mentioned you did those various other things here at the Fringe with the theatre show and the stuff at the Stand. Do you see being here every August in your calendar for the foreseeable future?
Well, I was saying when I was back home, I was like, this might have to be my last one because it's so expensive and it's draining. But now that I'm here, I'm like, no, I'm addicted. I'm gonna be coming back. I'm going to be coming back. It's the most magical place. But I don't know what I would want to do next year. I think, as I just mentioned, like it takes longer for an American to write a new hour. So I think I'm not going to be ready with a new hour next year, nor would I want to be. I wouldn't feel like it was... it wouldn't be as polished. So I could, maybe I'll do a whip and I'll just come briefly, or maybe I have an idea because I love magic so much, which you can see at my show, but I don't perform any in my show, but I do a little bit back home. I have a magician collaborator, Mark Clearview. He's amazing. He's currently at residency at Bellagio in Las Vegas. So Mark and I do a show at Club Cumming on Cummings Bar in New York. That's Love, Sex, and Magic. And I'm trying to convince him that we should do a two-person scripted theatrical magic show that's like kind of a play
That sounds
but
interesting.
But it's magic, right? Does that sound fun?
Yeah.
Does it? Yeah, because I love magic. We do tricks together. I think we could make something that's like really funny, joke heavy,
yeah.
but like great magic and maybe like endearing or meaningful by the end. And unfortunately, I can't do it by myself because I am not a competent enough magician. But also, I wouldn't want to. It's so fun when we perform together. So, and
it also makes sense because, of course, it's that cliche of the magician and the assistant. But to
well,
have
we
it
would both be the magician.
Well, exactly. To have it as a true double act,
yeah,
would be a really interesting sort of play on that.
Yeah, and that's how we perform too, which is so funny because technically, the assistant historically is the one actually doing the trick.
Yes.
And the magician is the one
taking the glory.
Yes, exactly. And distracting. And so when we perform together, Mark is doing the trick and I am distracting. I'm the pen and he's the teller.
Yeah.
So that means that I'm the magician.
Yeah.
And actually he's my assistant.
Yeah.
Haha. not really. He's a magician. But I think in this show, I want to cut him in half.
Yeah. Oh, well, of course.
Well, of course. And wouldn't that be cool?
Yes.
That would be so cool. We never see that. So I want to cut him in.
Yeah.
So maybe we'll do that as a whip next year if I can get him on board.
Although that's quite ambitious for a yeah. work in progress show, isn't it?
Yeah. But we would do it. We would do it on our monthly show. We would just like
yes.
work it in pieces.
And then,
yeah.
Well, I look forward to seeing maybe the sort of work in progress version next year.
Yeah.
And then the full one
yes.
in 2028.
Yes.
Let's see if we can make that happen. But let's focus back on 2026. Let's remind ourselves of the title of the show, the listings, etc.
Yes.
For this year's show.
It is called Jenny Borlick, Sorry, 1825, so 625, every day at the Monkey Barrel Studio, except for August 17th and 18th, I'm going to the Highlands with my family.
Oh, well, that's nice.
And that'll be nice.
Nice little break in the middle. Mm-hmm. And if people want to look you up online?
My handle on Instagram is at Jenny Sequoia. Jenny Sequoia. It's a pun. And then I have a website, www.jennygorlick.com.
Fantastic.
Yep.
Thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you.